The Devil's Advocates radio show is broadcast under a time brokerage agreement between Devil Radio and Civic Media, Inc. Some portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Warning! You are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever, and due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Civic Media Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
And now, here's your hosts, Dom and Kroot.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. The Friday edition. Thank God, Dominic. How you doing, little buddy?
Fantastic, Crudy. Happy Friday to you. Rich working boards, working the sound. Thank you, buddy. Our fair audience. Join us on the lines. Talk or text 844-967-2789.
Dominic, if you play our podcast backwards, it says smoke marijuana. Forward or backwards.
Forward.
Same message. I think that'll be the only vinyl we're spinning today. We'll see, though. We'll see how the show goes. Dom, I don't think we've put enough attention on the vice presidential nominee of Donald Trump. The guy keeps changing his name. I'm not exactly sure what's his real name. Isn't J.D. Vance, is that your real name? I don't think it is.
Is it? I saw that when he changed every first, middle, and last name had been changed at some point in his life. I mean, that seems a little strange, doesn't it?
I haven't verified that he changed his middle name.
We call you Crudy. You know, you're Michael Kroot. Call you Crudy. You know, but I mean, you've never like gone and like legally changed your name.
Not true.
Right?
Oh, I did have a legally differing name at birth.
Oh, you did?
I did. Pain in the ass getting a passport.
So you and J.D. Vance are similar in that regard.
Except there is
A nice looking... That's a nice looking coach you got behind there, man. It's
I do have a Diet Mountain Dew. We got that in common, if nothing else.
See, man, the Diet Mountain Dew, the changing of the name, the fancy leather couch. I don't know, man. You could be a vice presidential candidate someday, Crudy.
What do you think JD's trying to hide?
I don't know, man. I mean, who would go through that? Why would you do that? What's the motivation to change your name multiple times?
Well, for clarity's sake, Dom, I was born with a different name, and the name was of my mom's former husband, and they were divorced, and I was supposedly the child of that divorce, that loveless marriage. Only we did the math and it wasn't true, right? Found my DNA daddy, met him on the radio. Hell, I'm supposed to drive to Iowa to go to a family reunion this weekend. You know, technically, Dom, by birth name, I would not be Crudy. I would be Stevens. That's Chuck's DNA dad's last name is Stevens.
Stevens Crute with an S.
Was my mom's maiden name. She reverted back to using her maiden name after the marriage and had my name changed as well. And I had to prove it when I got a passport and I had to demonstrate. And thank God I went to school in Madison. I literally had to go to the schools and prove, like through a kindergarten, first grade report card, that same kid. I'm the same kid. You know, that was the time of the name change. So anyways, I had to do that. And I also had to get a friend of mine to claim he was a lifelong friend and he knew me since before the name change, but it wasn't true. He didn't know me all that long.
Oh, man, playing
the system. He'd known me for like 10 years, but not since I was like a
Manchurian candidate.
Kindergarten or whatever. So I was not hiding anything per se. I was just learning. I was becoming more aware of my genetics, I guess, Tom.
Yeah, is that what we're
or lack
it?
Thereof.
Uh-huh.
And J.D. Vance, what was his excuse? Yes.
The AP reported this as well. When it comes to Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance's name, it's complicated. Crudy, it's complicated. The senator from Ohio introduced himself to the world in 2016 when he published his best-selling memoir, Hillbilly Elegy, under the name J.D. Vance. Like J.D., he wrote, short for James David. In the book, he explained that this was not the first iteration of his name, nor would it be the last. Over the course of his 39 years, such a kid, Vance's first, middle, and last names have all been altered in one way or another. As Vance is being introduced to voters across the country as Donald Trump's new running mate, his name has been the source of both curiosity and questions, including why he no longer uses periods in J.D. He was born James Donald Bowman. James Donald Bowman in Middletown, Ohio, on August 2nd of 1984. His middle and last name's the same as his biological father, Donald Bowman. His parents split up around the time I started walking, he writes. When he was about six, his mother, Beverly, married for the third time. He was adopted by his new stepfather, Robert Hamill, and his mother renamed him James David Hamill. When his mother erased Donald Bowman from his and her lives, the adoption process also erased the name James Donald Bowman from the public record. The only birth certificate for Vance on file at Ohio's Vital Statistics Office reads James David Hamill, according to information provided by the state. Now, Beverly kept the boy's initials the same since he went to university by J.D., Vance explains in the book. He didn't buy his mother's story that he was named for his Uncle David, though. Any old D name would have done so long as it wasn't Donald. Now, Vance spent more than two decades as James David J.D. Hamill. It's the name by which he graduated from Middletown High School, served in Iraq as a U.S. Marine, earned a political science degree at The Ohio State University, and blogged his ruminations as a 26-year-old student at Yale Law School. Those facts are borne out in documentation provided by those entities upon request or otherwise publicly available and were confirmed by campaign spokesperson Taylor Van Kirk. But the situation gnawed at him, particularly after his mother and adoptive father divorced. "I shared a name with no one I really cared about, which bothered me already," a quote from him. "And with Bob gone, explaining why my name was J.D. Hamill would require a few additional awkward moments," he writes in his book. "Yeah, my legal father's last name is Hamill. You haven't met him because I don't see him. No, I don't know why I don't see him. Of all the things I hated about my childhood, nothing compared to the revolving door of father figures." Well, now you got Donald Trump as your father figure, J.D., so maybe we'll just start calling you J.D. Trump. Now, I'm not sure Junior's going to be happy about that. Anyway, so he decided to change his name again to Vance, the last name of his beloved Mama, the grandmother who raised him. He's named after his grandmother. And it didn't happen on his wedding day in 2014, as the book implies, but in April of 2013, as he was about to graduate from Yale, according to Van Kirk.
Had to clean up his name before he became a Yale grad.
Yale grad.
Now, let me ask you, Dom, what name appears on your birth certificate?
Philip Dominic Salvia. Yes, I go by my middle name. A lot of Italians go by their middle name for some reason. I was never, ever Philip, except by, the first day in class when they had to do the roll call, or when I, got in trouble with the law or with the nuns in high school, but the judges perhaps, but no one's ever called me Philip. It's always been Dom.
Felice.
I've been Nicky. I was named after my grandfather, Felice, but they Americanized it, so it became Philip. One L. What's your middle name, Rudy?
And it was Nick when I met you, and then somewhere around the time you graduated from grad school, you did a J.D. Vance on me and became Dom or Dominic. Right?
I did have Dom like personalized plates in high school, so I was Dom as well.
You were never Dom to me.
No, not to you. I've got so many names.
So you've got a number of aliases also, I would say.
But nothing legal. I've always had the same legal name.
How would we know that, as you are like a chameleon ever changing your name? You and J.D. Vance.
You know what I should have done is changed my name when we got on the radio, but, you know, I didn't have the good sense to do that.
Nor I. And I'm not giving away all my information. I don't tell my middle name to everyone. Oh, initial
come
W.
On, man. W.
Yeah, because.
For... What? Why? Who? Where?
Does it matter? I mean, really, does it matter?
Well, yeah, man. I told you mine. Now you can say yours. I'll say it for you.
Go ahead. Why don't you just give the people my banking passwords while you're at it? You used to know those.
Well, hey, man, at least I have the passwords. You don't know what they are anymore.
Well, that's what I have
so
you
JD
for.
So, J.D. Vance, does it matter? Does J.D. Vance's multiple names, does it matter?
He's got bigger problems than multiple names, Dom. The Democratic Party of the great state of Wisconsin, they're mentioning that J.D.'s got some bad video that's just come to the surface. I know it's bad because I found it at the Raw story, Dom. Yeah. Now, I'm not clear. Is this the same soundbite that you had asked of J.D. Vance, if that is his real name? Do we have this sound?
We do have sound.
Dystopian
cuts of J.D.
Dystopia scary. Senator joins alarmed internet over apparent J.D. Vance leaked audio. Wonder what he said. The internet was abuzz Thursday night over new audio shared on the social media by Kamala Harris's promoting account, in which Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance, if that is his real name, appears to say he'd be in favor of a federal response to prevent women from crossing state lines to obtain abortions. He says more than that, too. Maybe we can play it on the other side for the good people, Dom. And also, the governor of the state of Kentucky, Andy Beshear, you've heard a little bit about him. He's a fine Democrat, and he's been bantered about as a vice presidential candidate under Kamala Harris. Well, I am going to take the first grievance, Dom. I'm going to tell you why I got a problem with Andy Beshear on the other side.
Uh-oh, come on, man. You're harsh in the buzz already.
It's Friday. We air grievances. Since your life gets better every day, Dom, I don't know how I could harsh your buzz. For the rest of us pedestrians living our workaday lives, maybe it gets worse. Maybe it gets better.
You do it without trying.
844-967-2789. You know, yesterday I didn't have my greatest performance ever. But today, I'm going to kick ass and take names. Or, you know, perhaps tell names. Nick, Dom, Felice, Philip. Whatever your real name is. That never changed. More Devil's Advocates. That never changed either. With an S.
The Devil's Advocates. The fix for political junkies everywhere.
And we're back from the 420 break. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Happy Friday to us all, airing the grievances. You can join, talk or text at 844-967-2789.
Dominic, you want to hear what the nickname of J.D. Vance and his wife was when they were at Yale? Because we've got that. We've also got the new Secret Service nickname for J.D. Vance. And I would ask the audience, what do you think J.D. Vance's Secret Service nickname should be? I'll reveal it to you a little bit later, but I'm wondering, what do you think it should be? And please understand, we are restricted by the FCC. Couch effer is probably not an acceptable one.
Those aren't cushions.
Damn, you know, after the show, we talked about that last night. From the Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, John Candy and... Who was he with?
Steve Martin.
And they slept in the same bed. And those aren't cushions.
Those aren't pillows.
I found this over at the Daily Beast. A New York Times profile of Usha Vance, wife of Donald Trump's running mate, J.D. Vance, says she was known at Yale Law School for her sunny smile, leftish political views, and a penchant for tall, handsome, and conservative men. Or J.D., which she eventually got stuck with.
Right.
In a broadly flattering profile, the Times described a woman who avoided the political limelight until her introduction at the Republican National Convention last week. It points out how close she and her future husband were even in their Yale days, as per this fascinating nugget. You judge whether or not you find it fascinating, Dom, but I've got their nickname, their couple nickname. You know, you've heard things like Bradgelina. Well, apparently the future Vances, if that is their actual last name, they had a nickname in college, Dom, as a couple that others would call them. They were Judusha, J-U-D-U-S-H-A, Judusha.
I prefer UJ.
UJ.
Like OJ, but UJ.
They were actually combining JD, Usha, and Judicial. You know, like Benever or Bradgelina. What was that recent duo that's come apart, Tom? You know, you're right there with the pop culture. Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez. Is that the Benefer they reference? I think it is.
Oh, there you go. Maybe. Yeah.
Benefer. There's other nicknames and stories thereof. But before I break to you what the Secret Service will now be calling the J.D. Vance, the vice presidential, the undercard on the Republican side, Dom, we have it. But I would wonder, what do you think J.D. Vance's Secret Service nickname should be? 844-967-2789. Start with you, Dom. You got any clever in you?
Nope. Creeper. How about that?
Creeper? You know, I've seen recent allegations, not just of alleged sex with the couch cushion or a rubber glove squished in the couch cushions, but there's also stories going around how J.D. Vance went seeking dolphin porn.
Is that even a thing?
When you search for it specifically, and he shared a picture, but it was pointed out the highlighted words were the search terms. So J.D. Vance shared a picture of apparently a dolphin getting frisky with a human woman. And he went looking for it. You know, like this was dolphin porn. He went out looking on Dolphin Pornhub or something for this video, apparently. Because the search terms were on the picture that he shared. So I'm thinking something with flipper and an F might be his, you know, might be his nickname with the Secret Service.
Those wildlife shows are never going to be the same. We have audio, though. Some serious audio, apparently. Rich, are you ready for this one? Apparently, stunning audio leak finds J.D. Vance pushing for federal response to stop out-of-state abortions. This is one of our multiple J.D. Vance, if that's your real name, cuts. Let's play that one, if you would, please, Rich.
Okay, look, here's the situation. Let's say Roe versus Wade is overruled. Ohio bans abortion. You know, in 2022 or 2000, let's say 2024. And then, you know, every day George Soros sends a 747 to Columbus load up disproportionately black women to get them to go have abortions in California. And of course the left will celebrate this as a victory for diversity. That's kind of
health, health justice. These are me exterminating class black people.
Something like that could, I mean, that would be a really weird turn of events that could happen. Yeah. Yes.
And it's like, if that happens, do you need some federal response to prevent it from happening? Because it's really creepy. And, you know, I'm pretty sympathetic to that, actually. Okay, look, here's the situation.
Yeah. In such a scenario, would federal action be necessary to prevent it? It's quite disturbing. I must admit, I'm somewhat in favor of that. Well, you're gonna have the federal government respond to what? I thought it was states' rights. What are you talking about? You want to track women having their abortions, J.D. Vance? You think that's a good policy? And thank you for the George Soros knock. You know, you got to throw in some anti-Semitism in there as well. I mean, can't be true, Meg, if you don't check a few boxes when you say stupid things like that.
Dominic, Senator J.D. Vance, according to thehill.com, today addressed the firestorm brewing around his recently resurfaced remarks that the country was being run by childless cat ladies, calling it a sarcastic comment and pivoting to attack Democrats as anti-family. Anti-family, that's what we are, Dom. I know the media wants to attack me and wants me to back down on this Megyn Kelly. But the simple point I made is that having children, becoming a father, becoming a mother, I really do think it changes your perspective in the pretty profound way. His first time addressing the 2021 remarks. There's a deeper point here, Megyn. It's not a criticism of people who don't have children. I explicitly said in my remarks, despite the fact the media has lied about this, that this is not about criticizing people for various reasons didn't have kids. This is about criticizing the Democratic Party for becoming anti-family and anti-children and anti-dolphin porn. That last part I threw in there. They don't call him Flipper. That's not his Secret Service code name.
Oh, okay, okay.
But Bobcat is.
Bobcat?
He's Bobcat. Come back, we gotta find guests. He's Jim.
I don't know if you know the Devil's Advocates, but the show is kind of a big deal.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition. Dom, I've been peeking at the text line. People very clever with J.D. Vance's Secret Service name. One of the funniest ones, Eric from Madison, Shillbilly.
Ah, nice.
Apparently, his actual name is Bobcat. We welcome a fine guest right now, live via stream, live from the east side. Moving on up, he is James Santel, friend of ours, former U.S. attorney, host of Amicus, a law review on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday mornings, if I remember correctly. Jim, welcome back to the big show.
Hey, Jim.
Delighted to be with both of you, although I come with no Secret Service tag whatsoever. Nothing exciting. I'll work on it this weekend.
Give me 5 minutes. I'll have a moniker for you, Jim.
You can't give yourself a nickname, Jim. Yeah, other people have to do that.
I see that.
But you can give yourself a stage name. See, there's a very big difference.
All right. We learn something every single day when I'm with you.
Jim, let me ask you, has this not been one of the craziest weeks in the history of our nation? I mean, we saw the presidential top of the ticket candidate, Joe Biden, step down from his candidacy. We saw Kamala Harris pop up and become the presumptive nominee in a matter of hours. And we've also seen threatened lawsuits from the Republican Party. They're trying to tell me the Democrats don't get to pick their own nominee, Jim. Legally, do you think they got a leg to stand on here? Is there any way they could prevent Harris from being the top of the ticket on the ballot?
If I were to simply say no and say nothing more, how shocked would you be? So I won't do that. But the answer is a definitive no. And even Mike, as you described that out loud, I hope all of us, including your wonderful listeners, recognize the frivolity and the craziness and the lack of any substance to any of that. There is a fundamental notion here that there are governmental things. Those are elections and so forth. And then there are parties, right? And that's not government. That's not subject to all the constitutional trappings and other things like that. Parties have an absolute right to select their nominees, especially here where the nominee has not yet been identified, right? And so that's a key aspect to this that makes this highly problematic. Beyond that, to get into the legal stuff here, there is a right under the First Amendment to association inside any party, and that means they've got virtual autonomy to make decisions as they will, again, especially under these particular circumstances. Nothing wrong with that as well. You can always file the lawsuit. The question is will you win the lawsuit? And there the answer is no. The other thing I would add on to this, that yes, there are some money issues here. The Federal Election Commission.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, Jim. Perhaps they can't block her from being the top of the ticket, but there is an FEC complaint that has been filed by the Trump campaign. They're saying Harris ain't Biden. The money is not hers to spend. I know I interrupted you, but I'll let you continue.
And filed counsel. Filed also by Citizens United and 16 state Republican parties to try to stop Kamala Harris from getting the campaign money in a campaign that she is still on the ticket.
Right, exactly. And that's the key point. Again, we'd like to think that these things go off on facts and not speculation and other frivolous, crazy kinds of notions like this. But last time I checked, the Biden-Harris posters and so forth had Harris on there. She plainly, let's assume that Joe Biden had not stepped down, which he has, but let's assume that she would continue as the vice president. Would she not have access to those funds to campaign as Kamala Harris, the vice? Of course she would. Of course she would. Again, will the FEC probably address this and issue an opinion fairly soon? Hopefully that makes this also clear that there's no there. But again, this is just an effort, I think, to try to appease a base that wants to cause havoc here. Again, this fundamental notion that somehow there's a violation of the law here. These are political parties, and they don't have complete capacity to do whatever they want. But this is not government, where all these other limitations and statutes and regulations would apply. That's the fundamental error in all of this. It'll be interesting to see. It's a sideshow. It's not going anywhere. And we'll anticipate that, again, at the convention in Chicago in just a couple of weeks, not only will Kamala become the nominee legally, lawfully, but she'll have access to any funds that she raises and have previously been raised by this campaign, of which she has always been a part.
James Santel, our fine guest. Jim, my understanding is the Democrats will need to cast their delegates' votes for the nominee before this convention happens. And Dom has speculated, I hadn't thought it through in this regard, but he might be right. Be a rarity, but he might be right. That means they would also probably have to disclose her vice presidential pick in short order. My understanding, Jim, it is logistically necessary because I believe it's the Ohio State ballot qualifying. But even here in the state of Wisconsin, we need a candidate on the ballot by, I believe it's September 3rd. So there are specific legal dates for qualifying for the ballot that would affect this campaign, correct?
Sure, absolutely. And so no doubt lawyers who are much brighter, much more attentive to this around all 50 states, all the territories, including right here in Wisconsin, looking at all of that. And so they're participating in these discussions to make certain that there are no footfalls here, which we've seen a lot on the Republican side, right? Failing to file things in time and so forth. They're being very attentive to that. And if any of those should indicate that the Democrats need, in fact, to be on record, if you will, even in advance of the formal convention, they will certainly do that. Again, the issue, the ultimate deadline here would, as you indicated, early September. And the notion has always been that after that, as the nominees are specifically identified in a process and a time that's long been known, then they go on the ballots. And again, if it gets very late, there are also some rules and regulations. We've seen this in American history too. If somebody drops off, somebody dies after the nomination party, the convention, the nominating process is completed, then you've got some other challenges there. But right now, I think for the most part, timing is fine with the advice and counsel of attorneys who are focusing on not missing a beat here and ensuring that places like Ohio and others are not left on the side of the road.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, our friend, host of Amicus, the Law Review, playing out on Saturday mornings, 9 to 11 on the Civic Media Network. Jim, always a pleasure, man. It seems like it's been a long time. This week has been added a year to my life, I swear. But let's do a roundup of the current Trump litigation. He filed an appeal to what? The Manhattan DA's case, the Bragg case. And Bragg put up a 69-page response to it. What's your take on where that status is right now?
Sure. So this is Judge Juan Merchan, as we all know. He presided over the trial. It resulted, again, take every opportunity to affirm that the defendant was found guilty by a jury unanimously beyond a reasonable doubt. Donald Trump is a convicted felon, and the judgment of that will be entered at the time of sentencing. We can anticipate that will happen.
And there were 34 felonies, Jim. I just want to be clear. 34.
Yes, let's get the numbers correct. 34 felony counts, violations of New York state law, no longer a presumption of innocence. That is there. And Judge Mershon, in the abundance of caution, he wants to make a very good, he's very clear appellate record. He said, okay, we'll take a look at whether or not this recent Supreme Court case that establishes some immunities does in fact apply to this case. Everybody's filed the briefs, including, as you said, Alvin Bragg, including attorneys for Donald Trump. Alvin Bragg has made it very clear. And my prediction here today is Juan Merchant will issue a very explicit order on this, finding that there's no there, and we'll get a sentencing on September 18th. But before then, basically, he is going to find, consistent with what Alvin Bragg has written in this brief that you've just identified, Dom, he's going to find that, number one, there's a very sliver connection between the occupancy of the presidency by Donald Trump during some relevant time presented in the case. But second, that overall, the immunities do not apply here. Most of this happened before he was the president of the United States of America. And the biggest issue, of course, is even inside this outrageous and frankly unsupportable Supreme Court case, the notion that somehow these would be official actions to sign off on checks, to engage in conversations, do other things, to keep somebody quiet about a sexual affair that you had during the course of that campaign. Describe that for me, John Roberts, in the context of an official action of a president. That's the big issue here. And Juan Merchan will have no problem in finding all of that. Many major reasons, minor reasons, shutting all this down. He'll issue a good order sometime in the next few weeks. And again, I believe strongly that we'll have a sentencing hearing going ahead in front of him in mid-September.
James Antel, our fine guest, smarter legal minds than I, have suggested that perhaps some of the testimony from the hush money case could have been excluded by the Supreme Court ruling, yet the testimony was presented at trial. And now Merchan, as I understand it, has to determine how much weight, what preponderance of evidence would have been excluded, and is this inconsequential? Are these grains of sand in a pile of sand? Or is this meaningful testimony given by, let's say, Hope Hicks that was potentially excludable under this immunity ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court? Jim, do you think there's any reason to think the exclusion of Hope Hicks' testimony would have somehow turned the tables for Donald Trump?
The answer is no. And again, that's where you get this expression from Alvin Bragg, which I suspect Juan Merchan will pick up on. This was a sliver, he said, of all the evidence. Yes, there was a conversation between Hope Hicks and the president at that time while he was in office. We also get this testimony about some of the checks arriving by FedEx and that process going on inside there. But overwhelmingly, again, Alvin Bragg argues this, compelling evidence that the non-White House information, the white non-White House transactions support this conviction overwhelmingly. And frankly, one of the things that Juan Merchan may well do, again, he's a cautious guy, he may well say, you know, even looking at all the evidence, which he also heard, like the jury, even if you were to exclude the Hope Hicks and the testimony of the other staffer who described some of these events, overwhelming information, overwhelming support, it's called harmless error. Let's assume that the jury heard that and somehow took it into consideration. Overall, a consideration be minuscule, and the error, if any, which isn't conceded here at all, is harmless in terms of the ultimate result that they came to. The jury verdict fully supported. I suspect we'll have a section of his order that addresses what's called the harmless error analysis. And indeed, it does not undermine the conviction, does not undermine the findings of this jury. Although, again, to give them their due, that is the principal factual basis upon which the defense counsel are hanging their case, that there's this little tendril inside there. And again, based upon some of the crazy language from this Supreme Court case, we now have to get this entire case dismissed. It's an absurd proposition. Juan Merchan will not buy into any of it.
Folks, you are
Jim.
Let's
jump in here. Thank you, Jim. Let's move on to Judge Chutkan, the D.C., the yes. January 6th trial. Are we going to have some evidentiary hearings? We're not going to have this trial before the election. What's your sense of evidentiary hearings, these mini trials, as some folks are calling them, and when could they actually happen?
Sure. My understanding is that the package, if you will, of materials now back, shipped down the street, not too far from the Supreme Court over to the federal courthouse, back to Judge Chutkan. She's now got this, as I've said in previous appearances on this fine broadcast, the most unenviable position of a federal district court judge right now. She's got to make sense of this mess that the Supreme Court has dumped upon her to try to figure out what's official, what's unofficial, what is presumptively immune, what's absolutely immune. Well, we know what's absolutely immune, things with the Department of Justice, outrageous though that is. She's got to decide how all of this is parsed out. I don't know how you do that, but that's her assignment. And the notion is, yes, she'll have some hearings. She's got to do that. I think what she'll do is maybe have a status conference initially, ask the parties how it is we kind of parse through all this, and also ask, importantly, as we've discussed on Devils in the past, what's left of this case? All the Supreme Court decisions about what can and cannot be admitted, mostly not admitted, it carves out the heart of this case. And I think she'll want to know from both sides, is there anything left of this prosecution, and then go to these hearings after that? No chance that there's a trial anymore in this calendar year, certainly not before November 5th.
Jim, I wasn't quite ready to move on. I've got to ask you, September 18th, the sentencing in Mershon's courtroom. Is there anything, if he sees, like you have described, that this is inconsequential evidence that could perhaps have been excluded once he's determined this, Jim? Is there anything to prevent Juan Mershon from moving forward with sentencing? Hold that thought, because we got a quick break and we'll give you the answer on the other side. Our fine guest, James Santel.
...60% of the time, they're right every time. The Devil's Advocates.
And welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, former United States attorney, host of Amicus, a law review here on the Civic Media Network on Saturdays at 9 to 11. He's sticking around for another segment, Jim. Appreciate you doing so. Crudy, you had a question regarding whether or not anything in this case could be impacted, could impact the sentencing of Donald Trump on September 18th.
And being a good witness as I am here today, I remember the question well, and so I'm going to try to respond to it as best I can. And that is that, again, I think Judge Juan Mershon will take all this under advisement and then will issue almost certainly a written order, probably not an oral decision. It'll be very comprehensive. It'll be clearly shut down all of these arguments from the defense. And then it will also reaffirm that September 18th sentencing date. Now, between the time that he issues his opinion, shutting down the defense based upon the immunity decision and that date, will there be more things filed by defendant Donald Trump and his attorneys? Of course there will. They always do that. There'll be motions for reconsideration. They will try to take what's called an interlocutory appeal back to the appeals court there in New York. All those kinds of things could happen. At some point, even an appeals court has got to say, no, let's let this proceed. Let's just move toward judgment here. And certainly Juan Mershon will not give them any more time. But there's an option there for that they may, again, file more motions for reconsideration, all that kind of thing. It is unlikely, my own sense is, although I don't practice in New York, that this will not go ahead. Two negatives there. Likely that this will go ahead on September 18th. Why? Because then judgment can be entered. Then Juan Mershon is completely done with the case. He's entered the sentence. The judgment is done. Then the entire thing can go up on appeal, including a challenge to Judge Mershon's decision denying their motion based upon the Supreme Court. All that can be wrapped up as he goes up to the Court of Appeals after that. And maybe one day in 2025 or beyond goes on to the Supreme Court. We'll see. But more and more, the sense that this will be sentenced in mid-September.
Yeah, but is the guy going to jail? If sentenced to jail, would they stay his jail term?
Yeah, as to that, almost certainly Judge Juan Mershon will say, yes, I'm going to let the appeal process go ahead. I'm going to stay my order. And so don't look for Donald Trump to be taken into custody by any of the New York authorities on September 18th at 4:15 or 5:15 or so. He will remain on supervision. Remember, he is still being supervised and should remain on supervision after that. And again, depending upon what the judge does, whether he is put on probation, all that sort of thing, remains subject to that kind of jurisdiction. But very unlikely the judge would order. If he does order a sentence of incarceration, almost certainly he will stay that. He will suspend that until all the appeals are done. But again, an option for Judge Mershon to order incarceration, which in and of itself is a stunning thing to think about. A former president convicted of crimes and facing the possibility of being detained, his liberty being deprived, if you will, by the government and put behind bars. A stunning thing to think about.
Jim, the Florida case, the espionage case, that judge threw it out. My understanding is that's being appealed as well. What's the timing on that? It didn't seem to me that Jack Smith was in any sort of rush. Could he have sped this thing up? What's your sense on that?
Yeah, he's plainly frustrated. I think he's thinking all the time, why didn't I go back to the court over there in the Netherlands and passing more war crimes? But here we just know as of yesterday, here's the answer. The Court of Appeals, the 11th Circuit, is now taking up her dismissal based upon the authority that he apparently doesn't have, according to the defense and according to Eileen Cannon. They've set up a briefing schedule. Lawyers are going to be writing on this. Jack Smith files his initial brief on August 27th, a month from now. 30 days after that, Donald Trump's attorneys get to file their response. And yes, there's a reply from Jack Smith 21 days after that. As I look at my calendar, we're approaching Halloween at that point before this is fully briefed. They will have some oral argument on that. Maybe yet this calendar year, no decision probably, even from the Court of Appeals. Could be, but kind of unlikely even before the end of the year. Certainly no trial in that case. It's now at the appellate level. And again, you'd like to think that the 11th Circuit that plainly previously reversed her on two occasions when she's done these crazy, unsupported things would look at her once again and say, no, there's no there there. This has been settled law since 1974. But it's going to take a while for them to do that. And the question is, where does this land if indeed they send it back? Does she stay on the case or does this land at somebody else's docket, somebody else's courtroom? Right now, Jack Smith isn't asking for a recusal, but that is always an option down the road, depending upon how the Court of Appeals resolves all of this. It's going to be a while yet.
Jim Santel for just a few more minutes. Jim, obviously President Joe Biden has stepped down as a candidate for the presidency, but the right-wing man, they are losing their freaking mind. If you can't run for the presidency, you can't serve in the presidency, and they're calling for the 25th Amendment remedy. We heard similar calls after the January 6th and Trump, only he had a few cabinet members that seemingly were considering it. What do you think, counselor? Is there any chance, percentage greater than zero, that Joe Biden's cabinet would suddenly turn on the man in the last 6 months and end his term?
Absolutely none. The answer is no, zero, none. It's under the 25th Amendment. Incapacity is not here. Joe Biden took himself off the ballot for political reasons, right? He had a very bad debate performance. We all know that. But this is not a matter of incapacity to do the job. He's been doing it for 3.5 years. I'm looking forward to what he does now in the next 6 months. He is unleashed by a Supreme Court opinion. Bring it on, Joe, and tell us what you want to do in healthcare and education and environment and commerce and all kinds of things. And he's got a lot of active months and days ahead of him. No possibility of his being stepping down, or his being compelled to step down. Another absurd proposition out there on the political landscape.
Jim Santel, our fine guest. He is the host of Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings 9 to 11. Jim, real quick, any big topics on the show tomorrow?
You know, some of the same things. We're going to go back and again do some assessments of what's coming up in the Supreme Court, including there's some appeals courts that are doing transgender issues, almost certainly heading up to the court to the Supreme Court on an emergency basis. Again, interesting things under Title IX and other matters coming up. Again, we'll talk about it tomorrow morning.
Always worth a listen. Amicus, a law review hosted by James Santel, our good friend. Thanks, Jim.